Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome back to On the Continent, our weekly look at the big stories and latest news from across European football. I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Andy Brassel.
Andy, you must be absolutely brimming with excitement at the prospect of actual professional football being played within the next 48 hours.
I'm responsibly brimming with excitement, Luke. Of course, there are some health and hygiene matters that are paramount at the moment. But yeah, I'm, with a little bit of reservation, excited.
Well, don't get that everyone listening, is the sign and the sound of Andy Brassel not getting carried away. So don't worry about that. You're in safe hands here. Before I get into the detail of today's show, please do check out a Blizzard episode, The Greatest Game Show, in association with the Blizzard. It's coming out on Saturday, particularly for OTC fans, I think. Author Dominic Bliss has joined Marcus and Jonathan to discuss the Grande Torino side from the 1940s, which would be absolutely fascinating, something I'm particularly looking forward to. And the mailbag show for Patreon subscribers is out, as usual, on Monday, as it is every Monday. Andy and Marcus answer your questions about European football. So if you're a Patreon subscriber, make sure to listen to that. If you're not and you want to listen to it, it's patreon.com/footballrambledaily. Right, that's the admin done. Let's get cracking. As ODB once said, first things first. I know the show has been German heavy in recent weeks, but I make no apology for that because they've been in the vanguard of the prospective return to football after the COVID outbreak. And so we've had to stay close to developments over in Germany. This week is no exception because, as we just said, the Bundesliga and the Bundesliga's VAR will return on Saturday. Andy, I think a nice way of approaching this is for us to do a quick rundown of the big things people need to know ahead of the weekend, because I think it will serve a couple of purposes. Firstly, it will let people listening who don't follow German football that closely know what's happened so far this season, and they'll be able to get into it more. And for those of us who love German football but have a poor memory, that's me, it'll be a nice refresher. Shall we start with the title? I mean, we should start at the top, really. Let's start with the title race. Yeah. Bayern Munich are top, 4 points ahead of Borussia Dortmund, 5 ahead of Leipzig. But before everyone sighs collectively, that doesn't really tell the entire story of it so far, does it?
It doesn't tell the whole story. And who knew that ODB stood for Old Dirty Bundesliga, eh?
Old Deutsche Bundesliga. I sort of abandoned the ODB quote halfway through because I realised that it gets quite sweary and quite dirty as per. I just sacked it off after first things first, because he says first things first, you're fucking with the worst. And then he goes on a bit of a sweary rant after that. So I sacked it off. I hope people will forgive me. I just wanted to get an ODB mention into the show. Andy, you of all people will understand that, because you are Wu-Tang forever.
Absolutely. I certainly am. And I'm sure there are people out there at the moment listening and thinking, oh, I'm sure there's an article in sort of working out which Wu-Tang member is which Bundesliga club.
Yeah. Friend of the show, you should pitch it straight away after this record.
Friends of the show, Ryan Hun and Musa Okwonga, I'm looking at you.
Yeah, that's their area.
It really is their area. But so far, as you say, when you look at the table, it's easy, Luke, to think plus ça change, and especially because Dortmund go back in with a high-pressure game against Schalke. And, of course, it's a very unusual situation, but the Rafia derby is always big. We'll come back to that in a bit. And the fact that they almost have to win to keep pace with Bayern, because there's that four-point gap. But I think when you look at the top of the table at the moment, it's really a tale of three coaches. Or maybe we could extend it to four and five, but we'll come back to that in a minute. Bayern at the start of the season, it felt as if they could be genuinely challenged, and not so much actually because of the strength of the others, although of course Dortmund and Lucien Favre did run them very close last season, but because Niko Kovac, the coach with which Bayern started the season, was a sitting duck really. You know, there was no unanimous support for him really at the start of the season, but there was a strong feeling that there was no one really better out there. Of course, he won the double too, but when you look at what finished Kovac in the end, that 5-1 defeat at Eintracht Frankfurt, which was really shocking. I was over there at the time. It was first weekend in November, and I remember watching it before going to the Berlin Derby between...
Tough one for him Union to take as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But, you know, you saw Bayern like, probably a month before that, when they went to Tottenham and absolutely roasted them 7-2. And I think those who, if we're going back to the beginning and talking about people who've got a casual understanding of the Bundesliga or watch it now and then or whatever, it's easy to see Bayern and think, oh, they're ruthless, they're a machine, especially on a night like that when, as Pochettino said at the time, and it wasn't excuse-making, it was fact, that pretty much everything that Bayern hit went in. And yeah, that was so out of character with the rest of their season, because if you look at probably the biggest game of their season to date at that point is when they went away to Leipzig, who under their new coach Julian Nagelsmann were, I think for me at least, considered one of the challengers at the start of the season, notwithstanding a few little adaptation issues. And Bayern went there in what, the third, fourth game of the season, and played exceptionally well at Red Bull Arena. But they still didn't win. They missed a lot of chances, and it was a 1-1 draw. They let a lead slip. And I think that told us a couple of things about the start of the season. Firstly, that Bayern still had the talent that made them the best team in the Bundesliga, but were they able to take advantage of that, particularly under Kovac? There was clearly enough doubt for them to want to bid him. There was clearly enough doubt that at the start of the season, the club appointed Hansi Flick as an assistant to him. It wasn't Niko Kovac picking an assistant. It was the club going, here you go, there's a little bit of help. Almost as if they were covering themselves for the possibility that they would have to put Kovac in the ejector seat mid-season, which is exactly what happened. And Hansi Flick has gone on to do very well.
That's a metaphor. That is a metaphor. That's not how they actually did it. So don't write in.
I don't know about that, because if you've seen the Lego Ninjago film, when Lord Garmadon gets rid of his Shark Army generals and he goes, you're fired, and he literally fires them out of the top of his volcano lair, I imagine that's pretty much how it works at the Allianz Arena.
It's absolutely possible.
It is possible. It is possible. No offence, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. But I think the fact that Bayern post-Flick have been far more Bayern-like in the way they've played. It's not just the results. It's the way they've played. It's the way the players have felt. he had their respect straight away in a way that Kovac never did. And I think that's really important. They've not just done well in terms of results, but they've been expressive. They've been aggressive. They've scored goals. They're the highest goal scorers in the division. And, you know, Dortmund score a lot of goals too. So that's very impressive. To go back to the Leipzig thing, Nagelsmann was always going to lift an already good team a little bit higher. What was interesting, going back to that Leipzig-Bayern game, which I still think is one of the definitive games of the Bundesliga season so far, in the early part of the season, before he'd really properly established his print on the team, they were a little bit tentative at home. They could counter-attack with the best of them away. But before they learnt the sort of versatility that it took him a couple of years to teach Hoffenheim, and the fact that he's done that and they've incorporated those changes of pace in such a short space of time shows, A, what a great coach he is and how much better he is even than in the fairly recent past. But it also shows that he's coaching better players, of course. The bit where they beat Zenit St. Petersburg in the Champions League, which I guess would be about 1.5-2 months from memory after they had that draw with Bayern. That was the bit where they started getting it together at home a little bit more. And that's what saw them go to the top of the Bundesliga, of course, until they were knocked off. They had a couple of draws at the start of 2020. And in between, of course, you've got Dortmund, who again have emerged as the next best, as the most likely challengers. But there've been two, probably three moments this season where it looked as if they could justifiably fire their coach, Lucien Favre. And Favre is a coach who I think has huge respect for the jobs he's done at Borussia Mönchengladbach, of course, back in Switzerland before that, but in a Bundesliga context, in Borussia Mönchengladbach, who he saved from almost certain relegation and then got them into the Champions League the next season. You got Hertha Berlin quite close to the title, and, you know, we'll come to Hertha's season in a little bit.
More on them in a minute.
But yeah, that sounds like an absolute dream. But there was a feeling that though he's done some very good work at Dortmund, that his excessive caution was holding this team back. And when they, earlier in the season, they drew 3-3 with Wooden Spooners Paderborn, who have got the lowest budget in the Bundesliga by a long while. And Dortmund were 3-0 down at half-time in that game and came back to get a point. It felt as if it was too far already. And there are a couple of other little moments like that. But it's almost been... It seems a bit uncharitable to Lucien Favre, but so far that Dortmund's successes have almost been despite him rather than because of him. It's been the players stepping out and showing what they can do. And, of course, Jadon Sancho's been in wonderful form all season. He's been absolutely peerless. And there is an argument that he is, if not the best player in the Bundesliga this season, pretty close. I think really only Robert Lewandowski separates him from that title, because Lewandowski has been better than ever Lewandowski. And I'm sure we'll come back to that theme again of modern strikers being even better in their 30s than they were in their 20s, because it's an interesting one. But really, what's worked so well for Dortmund in 2020, and they've had this great mini recent run, when I say recent, you know, the last available fixtures, they've won 4 successive in the Bundesliga. It's the fact that, of course, they've had Erling Braut Haaland come in, a very un-Favre type of striker who has helped him out of a massive hole, because with the injuries to Paco Alcacer and then the subsequent sale of him to Villarreal, they had a lot of 9.5 type players like Royce and Goetze, but no proper penalty box predator, which now they have. And the other thing has been Emre Can, who's made an absolutely enormous difference in the centre of midfield alongside Axel Witsel. So those are your three real title contenders. I suppose there'll be people saying I'm doing a bit of a disservice to Borussia Mönchengladbach and Bayer Leverkusen, who are respectively Gladbach 1 point behind Leipzig, Leverkusen 3 points behind Leipzig. And Marco Rosso has done a brilliant job at Gladbach. They were leading the table for quite a bit. I think the fact that they've dropped off a little bit is normal, is regressing to the mean. They're a sensible, well-run club who have less resources than the three above them. But Rosso's made them absolutely terrific to watch. And Leverkusen are really interesting because, of course, it's Peter Bosz, who was written off after three or four, started brilliantly, but then quickly fell into a huge hole moments with Dortmund. And it always felt a better fit for him, Leverkusen, for me, because, you know, you've got the sort of players who are quick, technically talented, are going to enjoy his style of football, and there's not the same amount of pressure that there is at Dortmund. Now, I know people will say, oh, Dortmund, they're a cuddly, fun, lovable club, but Hans-Joachim Watzke, their CEO, has always said, well, look, you know, we can't be St. Pauli nowadays. We have to actually win because we've got 9 million, yeah. 9 million fans worldwide, and that's something absolutely. We touched on, wasn't it, in the recent Ramble book club with Building the Yellow Wall by Uli Hesse. So those, I guess, are the main themes at the top of the Bundesliga.
Yeah, and I think there is a temptation to say, okay, right, so as you said at the top of this, Andy, plus a change, I mean, nothing's going to be different. It's going to be a straight shootout between Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, and Bayern Munich will win it. But I think there's another thing that you haven't mentioned here, which is I feel is really important in the context of what's going to happen in German football. Now, I know, as you said to me, either at the start of the show or just off air, I can't remember, Christian Sievert said, we are playing this weekend for the right to continue to play because it's a real test. It's a litmus test. It's just see how you go and see if everyone can manage the conditions properly and keep everyone safe and happy. And speaking of managing the conditions, this is an unprecedented situation.
Yes.
Every single team that you've mentioned there, down to and including Bayer Leverkusen, you just think Schalke are a bit too far behind and they're a bit too inconsistent. But, you know, Bayer Leverkusen are 8 points off of Bayern Munich. Now, ordinarily, at this stage of the season, you'd be saying, well, there's no chance. They've just got to finish as high as they can. But this situation has never happened before. There are going to be no fans. There's going to be a completely different feel to how football is played in the Bundesliga from this weekend onwards. And if it continues all the way through to a close, which we dearly hope it does, the team that's going to be the most successful is the team that's going to manage the conditions properly. So it gives you a whole new way of looking at it. Who are the coaches and the managers and the players who are going to be able to own this situation better than anyone else? Because it's tight enough in there for that to make a huge difference. Now,
yeah.
Change to the rules or the laws, I suppose, which makes this a little bit easier for the bigger clubs, and that's obviously the fact that they can use more substitutes now.
Not yet.
But when does that come in, Andy?
It's available to the clubs, but they've not agreed on it yet. So,
forgive me. Okay, so that's not going to be a factor then. So, in which case, then the point I'm making stands much stronger than that. Then
it might be next week. Okay. So
it might be if Bayern aren't winning.
Yeah, they're going to talk about it.
But what do you think about that? The idea of managing the conditions and how important that's going to be, and how different that is to a usual Bundesliga season.
It's enormously important, Luke. And I know it's easy to mock marketing phrases, but that phrase that the Bundesliga uses to market itself globally, football as it's meant to be, I think it's interesting because the idea is they're bringing not just a certain standard of football, they're bringing atmosphere into your front room. They would argue even more so than the Premier League, because these are grounds that are all full every week. They have quite an unfettered atmosphere, certainly compared to what's happened in the Premier League over the last 5 years or so, 5 years plus maybe. So I think the fact that there are no fans, it almost makes it a different sport, doesn't it? I mean, we can talk about it in financial terms, as everyone has been talking about everything in financial terms. If we're going to go to that, the Rafia Derby between Dortmund and Schalke this Saturday afternoon, that is going to cost Dortmund, you could say, 5 million euros in gate receipts. But I think the real impact is far more than that, because you're looking at a stadium in which you have 25,000 fans behind one of the goals. You know, it's the best attended stadium in European football, and so to play a derby without that, it's quite an ask, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's going to be really odd for the players. I think as much as they can prepare themselves for it, and how they can go through their routine and the methods they go through to perform as best they can. I still think this is going to be really, really tough. I think the intensity, which comes almost automatically and subconsciously from playing at somewhere like the Westfalenstadion, is essentially entirely informed by the atmosphere generated by the fans. Now,
it's a cliche, but it's so special, isn't it? I mean, you experienced it for the first time, a couple of months ago when we were over there. But it really is, even for games that, aren't top billing A-star games, Westfalen is special. And you can say that about quite a few other grounds in the Bundesliga.
100%. And so when the players go out onto that pitch for the first time on Saturday for this big derby game, as you rightly say, I mean all bets are off, really. You could see any result here. Schalke have been, obviously, as you said, they've been poor at times this season. They've been in a terrible run of form coming into this game, but that doesn't matter, not because it's a derby game, but because all the parameters have changed. So it'll be a fascinating it'll be a fascinating weekend of football for lots of different reasons. We're pleased to see it back, but I maintain Andy's got the knowledge, Andy's got all the inside info, but the team that manages these conditions the best is going to be do a really good job of finishing the season strongly. Down the bottom,
so are you saying Borussia Mönchengladbach because they've got cardboard fans behind the goal?
Is that going to make a difference? We don't know. Is it going to make a difference if it rains? Probably.
Interestingly, we talked about the atmosphere. Now, Dortmund are training today in the stadium, and most of the teams are training in their stadiums as they're part of their closed quarantine camp at the moment. Dortmund are training with crowd noise and goal music today.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. That's interesting. That's a really nice idea as well. I'm looking forward to seeing how it manifests itself. Down the bottom of the table, Andy, though, I want to turn our attention to that for a bit, because that's an interesting situation as well. People might perhaps be surprised to see Werder Bremen down there. Can you explain a bit about why that's happened and who the candidates are for relegation and why?
Well, I don't want to say that Paderborn are gone, because they're only 6 points away from the playoff place. And as you say, things could change rapidly in this sort of environment. However, it's likely that Paderborn will go, because as we said before, they have the lowest budget in the division, of some 11 million euros a year. That's not just for the players, that's for traveling expenses and everything. It's an incredibly low budget for a top flight team in an elite league. But the fact that they're only a couple of points behind Werder Bremen is remarkable. Now, Werder Bremen have been incrementally dropping for quite a long time now. They were last in the Champions League in 2011. Of course, I'm sure a lot of listeners will remember them as double winners in 2004 under Thomas Schaaf, who was there as player and coach for, 40 years. It's an incredible story. But they are kind of enthralled to the past in a certain way. The sporting director is...
That's nowhere to talk about Claudio Pizarro.
if you're relying on a 40-year-old, I mean, you might have a slight problem.
He's actually 41, so the joke's on you there.
Yeah, there we go. even if there's, no doubt that he is part of the Werder Bremen furniture, and it's great to see him still back there now and then. Frank Baumann, who was the captain of that 2004 double-winning side, is the sporting director. And if we go back to the last coach but one, it was Viktor Skripnik, who was previously the under-23 coach and before that was a player for the double-winning side. So they've kind of found it hard to let go of that fabric of the past, which is so, so important for them. And that stability was always so important from them. If you start back in the 80s when Otto Rehhagel was the coach and brought them really from being a provincial club to prominence, that stability is something they've mimicked but not really provided over the last couple of years. And it's been really difficult for them. They've been left behind a little money-wise, but still there's if you look at the size of some of the clubs immediately above them, not just Fortuna Düsseldorf, but then you look at Mainz, Augsburg, you know, Union Berlin in mid-table, there's no reason that they shouldn't be a bit higher up the table. It's a management failure. There's no doubt about that. We also have to say, I've had an absolutely horrendous injury list this season, which has been a big problem for them. Again, maybe you could argue that's something to do with coaching and physical management as well as luck. But they have been heading this way for a long time, and it just hasn't really been addressed. Now, Florian Kohfeldt, their coach, is someone who I think is a decent coach. I have a lot of time for. And when he came in, a year and a half ago, that they were struggling at the bottom of the table. And he was, well, you know what? We've had enough of defensive football. We want to play front foot football. We're going to really swashbuckle our way out of this. And it worked at first. But now it's got to a point where they've just summarily shot themselves in the foot week after week after week. They've had two wins since September. They've not won a home game. And bearing in mind they're hosting Leverkusen on Monday night, they've not won a home game since the 1st of September. And they were really quite lucky to win that one as well. I think Augsburg is still wondering how they lost it. So they've got a whole plethora of issues. I mean, Milot Rashica, who's their star turn, he was linked with a move to Leipzig earlier in the week. And, you know, there was, you know, actually someone, a couple of papers coming out and saying he'd already agreed this move to Leipzig. Now, Leipzig have come out and said that's not the case. You know, no one's committing money to any player in this current environment as things stand. But I think it shows that if you're talking about those key players moving on already, it feels a bit like relegation is kind of an inevitability. Even if there's only 4 points between them and Fortuna Düsseldorf in the playoff place. Now, this is the other thing. As the season is scheduled, obviously, they hope it will go to its natural end at the moment. If it does, there'll be a two-legged promotion relegation playoff, as there always is. So current third from bottom, Fortuna Düsseldorf, coached by Uwe Rösler, would play third from top in the Bundesliga 2, which is currently Hamburg. I mean, that would be quite an occasion, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they've said that if the season has to be abandoned at any point, what they would do is, much as they've done in France, they would cancel the playoff, obviously, relegate the bottom two and promote the top two from Bundesliga 2. But for Werder, the other disadvantage they have is because, as you might be aware, it's not just Angela Merkel who's made the governmental side of the decisions in this. It's been conducted in symphony with the 16 federal leaders of the 16 federal regions of Germany. So Werder Bremen were not allowed to start training at the same point as all the others. So they and Eintracht Frankfurt were the two teams, for those reasons, that wanted the Bundesliga to restart a week later. And the other clubs or the other regions overruled them. So they've had a little bit less training. Now, Kohfeldt's talked about how he's had to be a little bit more creative in training, how when they were training in groups of five, he'd like pair a goalkeeper with a striker and a couple of defenders, and they'd sort of do it from there. But for them to have had less team training and the fact they're very low on confidence, it's tough, I think, to see them getting out of it.
Yeah, I think the managers there in those kind of clubs need to use it as a reset, don't they? They need to say, look, this is a great leveller for us. Werder Bremen have got some good players. You know, I mean, I know it's a great summary of them there, and I know they've had injuries, but they'll have some players that casual watchers of German football who will now undoubtedly become keen watchers of German football because they have to. They'll have some players in there you'll recognise in the shape of Davy Klaassen, Nuri Sahin, Claudio Pizarro, those types of players. So it's they're an interesting team to keep an eye on. And if it's a better, in the same way that it's an opportunity to upset the apple cart at the top of the table, the principle is exactly the same down the bottom as well. So it'll be.
Are you subtly saying that's the team you should support, Ramblers? Because they'll be looking for it. No. They'll be looking for a bit of direction from you. I mean, I'm far too neutral to give any advice, but you might want to.
Well, I shared Archie Ryan Tutt's flowchart on the Football Ramble Twitter to choose your Bundesliga team. But the way I see it, and I've said this before and I'll say it again and I'll make no apology for it, I've been absolutely lumbered with Portsmouth my entire life. So you bet your bollocks I am going for Borussia Dortmund when I get to choose a team, because at least they're fun and enjoyable and sometimes they win stuff. So I'm Borussia Dortmund and I'll make no apology for that. What I'm saying, though, is that if you look at it's exactly the same principle as what I was saying earlier. Werder Bremen would be in big, big trouble had this situation been different. They're in big trouble anyway, but they might be able to use it as a bit of a platform, a bit of a leveler, because there are going to be teams who are going to have an absolutely terrible time adjusting to these conditions. And if you can master the conditions, you might have a chance. But anyway, I now want to move on to a section that has been specifically designed so that Andy can talk about the shit show that is Hertha Berlin. And what I'm going to do is just read the following sentence and let Andy get on with it. And the sentence is thus: Hertha Berlin has appointed former Germany goalkeeper Jens Lehmann to take Jürgen Klinsmann's place on the Bundesliga club supervisory board. Just when you thought that Hertha Berlin couldn't get any more mad, that Lars Windhorst, who chucked £200 million into the club last year, couldn't go any more off-piste, this happens.
It's pretty special, isn't it? I mean, you know, they've kind of cornered the market in ritual humiliations in the Bundesliga this season.
Yeah.
And after the whole
phase one of their plan,
after the whole Jürgen Klinsmann one, and again, if you've not paid particularly close attention to this season, summary: Klinsmann is on the advisory board. Klinsmann is then appointed coach of the team after Ante Kovac goes, which seems a bit weird, but you know, he knows the club at least. You know, he's not coming from the cold. You know, he understands the ambitions of Lars Windhorst, the major investor, or the rest of it. He is met by a huge crowd of photographers for the first home game against Dortmund. He's taking pictures and video of himself for Instagram, and Instagram will become a theme with Hertha. I've got to tell you, or Facebook Live.
Yeah, Andy, can I just cut in and say, when you're talking to me about people choosing their Bundesliga team, I mean, I'd just like to add an addendum to that. Don't choose Hertha for so many reasons. Choose any other team. Do not choose Hertha.
Do because you know, there's plenty going on. That's what I would say. So Klinsmann's filming himself with, you can see the back of his phone case. Obviously, it's an Adidas phone case. They're sponsored by Nike. then there's doubt over whether Klinsmann can go on the bench anymore because he might not have the up to date coaching qualifications. They're in a draw at home in California, which a mate goes into his house, photocopies them, which earns him some sort of amnesty. Then he leaves after realizing he can't take over the general manager Michael Preetz's job because it's his job. He leaves all the coaching to Alex Nuri anyway, who's his assistant, former Werder Bremen coach. So he wishes Nuri good luck over WhatsApp and all the rest of it. But Nuri's thrust into dealing with this. And now they decide they need a Jürgen Klinsmann replacement. And I have to say, in terms of the utter scatterbrainedness of the appointment, it's very much like for like.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it can only be a good thing for people like us. And one thing you did miss out on that is, just because there was so much to squeeze in, don't forget that Alex Nuri also left and has now been replaced by someone else in the shape of Bruno Labbadia.
That's right.
Incredible situation there. So keep an eye out for Hertha, because there will be absolute fireworks there. They start off on Saturday away at Hoffenheim, who are a better team than them, let's be fair, but not by an awful lot.
And Hertha 6 points above the playoff places as we stand.
Exactly. So German football coming back this weekend. Looking forward to it. Give it a watch and enjoy it.
At international level, if there's a greater honour than playing for your country, it's captaining your country. Beyond that, captaining your country in one of the big competitions, like the European Championship in 1988.
Hold up. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
We could call it Pete and Mark's Colossal Tussle.
But we didn't. We called it Wrestle Me. Wrestle Me, Mark.
Wrestle Me, Pete.
A celebration of all things WrestleMania and beyond. And you may be thinking, I'm not really into wrestling. Well, don't worry. There's something for everyone. To be honest, it's mainly about stuff like this.
So hang on. Easy Lover was the original theme on WrestleMania.
It was. Someone heard it on the radio and went, that sums up everything about WrestleMania to me.
And this. You can really see the old back acne on test.
Yes.
And this.
Is it worth reminding people of what earthquake John Tenta looked like at 23 years old?
Yeah, I think so.
And this.
For the record, Marty has made it very clear, and I agree and believe him, that he has never, A, had sex with his daughter, or B, wanted to have sex with his daughter.
And the people behind the face paint doing the most unique job in the entire world. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. That's Wrestle Me.
Wrestle Me, Mark.
Wrestle Me, Pete.
Okay, I think you could be forgiven for thinking that France is done. Nothing to talk about there because they decided to terminate their football for the season last month, obviously. They crowned PSG champions. They relegated Amiens and Toulouse and said that was that. Amiens have been working to try and stop relegation happening for obvious reasons. And do remember that because that little nugget is going to be key in this little discussion a bit later on. Because this looks like it may well become the season that actually won't end. Your friend of mine, Lyon CEO Jean-Michel Aulas, who gets a lot of airtime on this show, chairs the assembly of the Ligue 1 clubs, and he is still not happy about the rest of the season being cancelled. The way he's behaving, I think, is starting to brown off quite a few other big hitters in French football. Now, he's got a nemesis, obviously, because chairmen and CEOs in French football, well, everywhere really, are mad. He's got a nemesis, right? His arch enemy, Jacques-Henri Hérault of Marseille, has even mentioned the word impeachment about Aulas' behaviour, according to reports. Aulas supports relegated Amiens' campaign to annul relegation and expand next season's Ligue 1 to 22 clubs. Andy, it's a political shitstorm again, to use that word again, rumbling over in France. What's happening here? And secondly, is this idea from Aulas and Amiens gathering enough support to make it realistic?
Well, Aulas is someone who's never been out of the media ever since this decision's happened. He's not been off Twitter, and he's one club president that definitely shouldn't be allowed on Twitter.
But disagree. Completely disagree. For the exactly the reasons you think he shouldn't, I think he should.
Well, look, I know he's mastered tech speak, but that's no reason for a 70-year-old man to be on Twitter. The fact that he's been in the newspapers every day, he's been on radio and television pretty much every day. Of course, he's unhappy about it because it means Lyon, his club, who he's always represented excellently, of course, and I don't think there's any doubt about that, are not going to be in Europe for the first time in over two decades. The wider opinion from the football community is everyone's having to take a hit, just deal with it. Now, he's saying now it's about the way that France looks in the rest of Europe, because the rest of Europe are still trying to find a way to carry on, that he feels it's been premature. And he's saying that it's not about his club not making Europe. And that's why I guess it's sort of, if you're being cynical, you could say it's politically expedient for him to attach himself to this Amiens campaign and their president, Bernard Joanna, as someone who's obviously been quite vocal himself. And he's got lots of high-profile supporters for their campaign. I mean, if Olivier Sadran at Toulouse was doing this campaign, it would be ridiculous because, I mean, they were done anyway.
Yeah.
So there's really no argument over it. But
they're a club and also a verb.
Yeah, exactly. Nick and Lars Sivertsen's material there. Yeah.
He's not here, is he?
No, he's not.
It's a tribute. It's not a theft. It's a tribute.
He just left it lying around in the studio. I mean, exactly. What are you meant to do?
Exactly.
But the thing is with Amiens, and I guess this is the case with any club, how can you have consequences that heavy? And let's face it, the consequences of relegation are heavier to a club of that size than they are to Lyon for not making Europe for one season, which arguably could be a bit beneficial for Lyon and could let them get all their ducks in order with a bit of space in the calendar. I'm sure they don't see it like that financially, but I would argue that there's something to be said for that. But with Amiens, that, like, to just be cut off like that when you're still really in with a chance is pretty tough to cope with. Now, they've been supported by local government and regional government, but they've also been supported by Laurent Blanc, Antoine Kambouare, people like that. So it still feels unlikely because people are just getting it straight in their heads what's happened. And you've got everything down to the clubs working out how they're going to have this, what is really an extraordinary long preparation for next season. Now, they're going to have like 3 weeks to a month off at some point, the players. But, you know, they've got to retain a base level of fitness. And this is something that's not really been talked about that much so far. How do you prepare as a player, having not played from the middle of March, for a season that's going to start in September? It's something that's really, really difficult. So most people are just trying to get their heads around that. And so many of these other presidents are feeling that, you know, we just want to get on with things now. And there's a great quote from Laurent Nicolin, the president of Montpellier, the son of the great Lulu Nicolin, who said, well, Olas has spent like the last 10 years trying to reduce the amount of clubs to 18, and now he's 17, take 22.
Yeah. Which, it's amazing how much of a part expediency can play in these difficult times. It's incredible, yeah, how shameless that people can be. But I mean, look, it's an uncertain. If you're being fair to people, or as fair as you can be, it's a difficult time. It's uncertain. People don't know what's happening, and so. But what's your feeling on? I mean, if you can briefly, because we got to push on. What's the feeling from you about how this will transpire?
I don't think Amiens will get it done. I think they're really unlucky, but they're going to end up with the decision standing, and I think that's pretty much it. Although Jean-Michel Aulas is writing to parliamentarians as we speak.
Nothing else to do. Nothing else on. Literally. Do you know what? I applaud it, because most people will be sat around watching The Last Dance on Netflix. You know, and he probably is doing that because the whole world is doing that. But at least in between episodes, he's keeping busy.
Well, the thing is, they were going to have a busy summer because, you know, Paul McCartney was playing live at the Groupama Stadium as well.
Do you know what? You know, how, what are people going to do without that 48-minute rendition of Hey Jude? It's going to be tough for them. They're the real victims here. Listen, Andy, I mentioned Marseille actually earlier, didn't I? And speaking of them, they've had the best season they've had for 7 or 8 years, arguably the best season they've had since they won the league in 2010.
Yeah,
and as is the custom these days in modern football, it looks like they might be facing a fight to keep hold of some of their best players, even in this uncertain time. There appear to be tough negotiations ahead for the aforementioned Ero. It gets even more difficult for him as well because new L'Equipe coach of the year, André Villas-Boas, which is now his full name, has said that he won't stay if he's not given the means to compete in the Champions League. Good old André. That's always seeing the bigger picture. That's a quote that came out actually quite recently, despite all the other stuff that's happening. He said he doesn't want to make up the numbers. So that's a problem for the big boss at the top of the club as well. I mean, on one hand, there's no precedent for Villas-Boas leaving the club prematurely before, is there? So I'm sure it's just all talk, I expect. But to be semi-serious for a moment, Marseille are facing what a lot of clubs find they face in modern football. You have an above-average season, you have a good season, but you're not one of the true giants in Europe. You're going to face your team potentially being decimated. We've seen it with Ajax. We've seen it to an extent. We saw it in Monaco, didn't we, as well? It happens. Is it going to happen for Marseille, or are they just not quite that good and it's not going to be as difficult as that?
They are in a much worse situation than any of those previous teams you mentioned. They're in a much worse situation than, say, Monaco.
Because of contracts and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. At least Monaco were able to get in a ton of wedge for the players they want to move. The problem is...
They spent that well, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. the problem has been for Marseille for like since the start of the season, since Villas-Boas arrived, really. And he must have gone in with his eyes open, you presume, because the players they've wanted to sell the most are the players that no one really wants to take. Kevin Strootman and Dimitri Payet, who has had a sensational season, but is coming up into his mid-30s and earns an absolutely eye-watering amount of money, which is a huge problem. So the thing is, they've got a lot of assets that are running out of contract as well. Florian Thauvin's the obvious one. We spoke about him in a previous OTC.
He's hardly played, hasn't he? He's got his own problems fitness-wise, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. But the fact that he came out, as we said in that Instagram video the other week, and said, well, I love Villas-Boas, even though I've only played for him for half an hour. He's a great bloke. We've developed a great relationship. And I want to play for him in the Champions League. And the club are going, but this is our last chance to sell you. So, because you're out of contract next summer.
But the other thing with Andy, the other thing with young Florian is that he's, I think he was, and I might have said this at the time, I think he's a little bit, he's projecting a bit there. I think he's got a huge insecurity about the moves he's made in the past.
Oh, he does. He feels he was forced into it when he went to Newcastle before. And he's like, well, you're not going to force me into anything else just because you need the money. Because A, he's a better player. B, he's a more mature guy now. So he can stand up to the club and say, well, look, I'm not going to take any old move just because it will earn you a couple of quid. Just deal with it.
Andy, were these players who clearly Villas-Boas, from the quotes that Villas-Boas I've read from AVB, he clearly wants to keep this team together, but he also wants to strengthen. So what he's saying, I mean, if you put aside the COVID situation, which I understand is a gigantic thing to put aside, but just for the purpose of this discussion, in a normal season, Villas-Boas, I think, is within his rights to say, I've done a good job here. We're now in the Champions League. That brings money. I want to keep my players and I want to add players so we can compete because I don't want to make up the numbers in the Champions League, right? That's reasonable. He's done a good job. I don't mean to undermine him. But
is it reasonable, though? Is it reasonable?
That's going to be my question. One was going to be my question. How do you feel about that situation? But secondly, how involved would AVB be in the negotiation of new contracts at a club in France? Is it all done by Ero or would it be done with AVB as well?
Yeah, it can't be done by him because, I mean, that they have got a huge financial problem. I mean, you can talk about the Champions League money and, yeah, it's a huge boost to the morale of the club. We know the relationship Marseille as a fan base and a city has with the Champions League. But the fact is, They lost 80 million euros plus last season, and they lost 50 million at the halfway. They'd lost 50 million by the halfway point of this season. Those figures are horrendous, and there's no getting past that. So they're way over the top on FFP. We can talk about the fact that you know, UEFA is going to be kinder in terms of FFP, but they were way over the top with FFP before any of this started. So them getting off the hook for this would be really, really surprising. Them getting into the Champions League is not an absolute given, I would suggest, at those sort of numbers. Although that would be brutally harsh on the players and on Villas-Boas himself. And then you look at, as we say, the contractual situations. Where is the money supposed to come from? You know, how can you reinforce a club, reinforce a team without any money to do it? I think he's asking for the impossible.
Do you think he's asking for the impossible on purpose to leverage a move somewhere else?
I would like to think he's self-aware enough to know that while he's got respect for the job he's done this season, I don't think the whole of Europe is going, oh, God, we must have him. I don't think they're thinking that. I mean, he's only got another year on his contract. If he wants to walk away, he'll walk away, and the club will let him, I'm sure. Though it would be tough for them, and it'll be tough for him, because of course he wants to take it forward. I suspect some of it feeds into, I'm guessing, again, I'm projecting here, but a little regret that he must have about, well, if I'd have stayed with Porto for that extra year. You know, look at the team he had with Moutinho.
Oh, he can't still be thinking
and
about
Hulk
that, Andre.
That play.
Come on.
I'm still thinking about that. Why shouldn't he be?
I like good old AVB. I've got a soft spot for him ever since he really pissed off every journalist in Fleet Street for just for being handsome and speaking about four languages and them not really knowing how to deal with him. I've got a soft spot for him, but he does need to put down roots at some point. I mean, it's getting a little bit ridiculous now.
The one plus we have to say in France is the fact that just when you thought the dust was settling over this sorry situation that's going on throughout the league, we finally have the prospect of some sort of unity amongst the clubs for the first time, because the DNCG, which is the financial control board of Ligue 1, has sent out a letter to all the clubs saying, we're totally conscious of all the difficulties, all the current difficulties tied to the COVID-19 crisis. However, they're going to be more severe than ever when it comes to judging financial conditions. And bear in mind that they've relegated teams for losses before, or for not giving a full accounting picture of what's going on at the club, and not convinced them that they're going to get through the season. If you remember, at the start of 2003-2004, the season that Monaco eventually made the Champions League final against Porto under Didier Deschamps, of course Jose Mourinho's Porto, they were relegated at the start of that season before they appealed against the decision. Lille were going to be relegated administratively before they moved a few chairs pretty quickly with that season that started with Bielsa and finished with Christophe Galtier the season before last. So, yeah, at least we know everyone still hates them, right?
Mieux aller les percuter, pourquoi pas les déborder. Oh là, c'est un carton incontestable de Di Biagio. Il est jaune.
All right, a little glimpse behind the curtain. Andy lobbies very hard with me to talk about Portugal every single week. And most weeks, I deny that request in association with producer Charlie. But I'm going to make an exception this week because Portugal might well be the next league to come back. It was set this week as a possible return on June the 4th. Government had previously said in Portugal that play was possible from May 30th. So it was assumed it would start then, but the league said they wanted more time. So it looks like it might be June the 4th, but there have been some issues this week relating to a player's code of conduct that has been issued. And it looks like a maximum of 8 stadiums will host games, which obviously puts us in mind of the neutral ground issue that's currently dominating the Premier League conversation as well, Andy. Give us a little précis of what's been going on over in your beloved Portugal, and I'll get my natter out and let you carry on.
Well, the player's code of conduct was something that was issued. I guess at least partly in light of what happened with the Salomon Kalou thing in Germany. Now,
yeah,
it was issued about a week after that, so I suspect the body of the document was in there already. But it felt like it had this extra meaning, the idea that players needed to take responsibility for their actions as well. And some high profile players, led by Danilo, the captain of Porto, were just thought it was too much, and thought it went beyond. It was almost absolving the league of a duty of care.
Which, so it's basically putting all the responsibility on the shoulder of the players, basically.
I mean, this will be very, very unfamiliar to UK listeners, obviously. But I think it's something that's been smoothed over now, at least on the surface of things. The neutral venues thing is interesting, though, because it was spoken of earlier in the week that there was going to be a maximum of six venues where games could take place. That is now possibly going to be eight. Now, as we speak, assessors from the FPF, which is the Portuguese Federation, Portuguese FA, and the league are going round various level two and level three grounds, as they're classed, and seeing if they're fit to hold these games under the current sanitary conditions. Now, it's a very different situation to England for a couple of reasons. Firstly, the infrastructure of some clubs, even in the top flight, they won't be able to meet these sanitary conditions in their stadiums. There's questions in terms of the sort of overheads they'll have to pay, especially when they're not receiving match day revenue. And when you bear in mind that clubs, particularly after Euro 2004, struggled to pay utility bills on bigger stadiums, some of them anyway, obviously not Porto, Benfica and Sporting, but clubs lower down like Beira-Mar, for example, who had to move out of their Euro 2004 built stadium. So, I mean, clearly some teams are going to be playing in neutral venues. Now, interestingly, just outside Lisbon is the training centre that the Portuguese FA have and the national team go and train at. It's like the equivalent of a St. George's Park or whatever. Now, a couple of teams are signed up to play there already. Belenenses, perhaps not surprisingly, who play at the national stadium normally, having moved out of Restelo a couple of seasons ago, but also Santa Clara, because they play on the Azores, the islands that are 2.5 hours flight away from mainland Portugal. So clearly, in sanitary terms, everyone has to play on the mainland. Now, Marítimo, the one top flight club who are in Madeira, have a problem with this, and their president Carlos Pereira has come out and say, "Well, look, we're playing in Funchal in Madeira, and that's the end of it." So that is a huge problem. I mean, Santa Clara have really taken one for the team here, because they've said, "Look, we'll." Their official statement was, "We're going to represent the Azores, and you know we're going to do it on the mainland, and it's going to be all good and all the rest of it." But it's a massive thing to ask, isn't it? A team to play like 900 miles away from home. That is not a situation that any of these Premier League clubs are going to have to deal with. And the fact that the smaller clubs have a lot to gain by playing their games on an island, and it makes up for that lack of money, for that lack of infrastructure, it's a huge thing to ask them to give up, really. So I can understand why Marítimo have a problem with this, especially as, surprise, surprise, they're currently fourth from bottom, which, they're unlikely to be relegated, but Santa Clara are in a slightly more comfortable mid-table position, you might say, so maybe a little bit more open-minded to it. But it looks like there are other teams that are going to sign up to play at the national training centre as well. Vitória Setúbal, José Mourinho's hometown team, they're going to as well. And Famalicão, if Rio Ave are allowed to play at home in Barcelos, that they will be moving in with Rio Ave for the moment. So like I said, I think this is really important to understand the distinction between England and Portugal in terms of size, in terms of infrastructure. And the fact is that the smallest clubs in the top flight are so deprioritized. When António Costa, the Prime Minister, met with the head of the FA and met with the clubs, he didn't meet with all the clubs. He to discuss the restart to the season. He met with the presidents of the three big ones, Porto, Benfica and Sporting. And obviously there are people in Portugal who say, well, that's typical. But there are a lot of people out there who simply don't give a shit and just see that as normal, because you know there's not been enough support for these small clubs, so a lot of them just have to lump it basically.
Are you suggesting? Are you perhaps even implying that if Maritimo were top of the table, they would already be here? They'd already be on the mainland, right? Ready to go? Come on! But also, Andy, that puts me in mind. We really have to go because we haven't got time to get into it in depth. Unfortunately, we'll have to do it next week.
Game of the week.
Game of the week is obviously going to be Dortmund v Schalke. But let me just put this out there. The exact principle you're talking about in Portugal, we could see manifest itself in Spain because of Mallorca, who are third bottom in serious danger of relegation. They could find themselves in a similar situation should the league look to bring itself back in the near future. I mean, at the moment, it's talking about doing it in the middle of June. So that could happen there as well, right?
And it's interesting because they are the last club to take up training again as well. Like once the government had allowed the capacity for the teams to train again, Mallorca didn't take that up straight away. So I think that's one to watch. But
yeah, absolutely.
Again, just like we've heard Gerard Piquet come out and talk about it, players still need to be convinced. There's still a little gap there. So we'll have to see how that goes, because I think one of the big things for Germany has been how they've convinced the players, at least ostensibly, how they've convinced the players.
And speaking of Germany, the games of the week this week are literally any game you can watch on TV from the Bundesliga. BT Sport is your destination for that. So enjoy it. It's been a long wait. I shall certainly be enjoying it. I know Andy will too. That's OTC for this week. Don't forget, the boys will be back tomorrow with the preview show. Marcus, Pete, Jim and I doing all that good stuff as we do every Friday. Saturday, as I've already mentioned, is the Blizzard episode, the Gretz Games episode in association with the Blizzard. And on Sunday, there will be another At The Match Revisited episode. And I have to recommend it very highly. It's my personal favourite of the At The Match series. It's when Andy goes to Los Angeles and watches LAFC. And the atmosphere at that game sounds so, so good. You've got to listen to it on Sunday, particularly if you're missing what it's like to go to a football match with a good atmosphere, as I'm sure we all are. Do check that one out. It's going to be unmissable. Andy, that's it from us, isn't it? Thank you very much for your company, as ever.
Thanks, Ramblers.
And it's goodbye from me as well.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.